That's just a cool recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
All right, good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, you got some sleep this weekend?
Oh, yeah, I got sleep.
Yeah, you look like it, man.
I got sleep.
You look like you're going to survive the show.
I will survive this. You know, I survive every single day.
But, right? You know, you look like you're in a little bit better situation than surviving the day.
Yeah.
You actually look like you're going to be thriving.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, finally. Okay. All right.
He's got his voice has ups and downs in it. You know.
Yeah.
Sort of
yeah,
no longer that flat, no affect.
Go ahead.
It's not because of you guys. I don't want you to think that. It's literally because of the fact that, like, when I'm out of here, I'm like a rainbow. I put in so much energy in the all the music and stuff that I work on and with my friends, and I come here and it's like it's very relaxing to listen to you guys talk about things.
Are you saying we put you to sleep?
No.
Oh, okay.
Why do you do this to me, Earl? You're like, nah, you put us to sleep.
It's Monday, and that means Mondays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. Good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right. You know, in fact, I was looking for the recorded show. I periodically try to listen in to see how it is we might have sounded on the show. Found out we're in podcast now. You've moved up the food chain, Earl. The Earl Ingram Show is now available by podcast in the Apple Podcasts, in the podcasts on Android, I think. You can just ask Alexa or ask Siri, hey, play the Earl Ingram Show, and damned if it doesn't just come up.
So for novices like myself who don't understand any of what you just said,
mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Well, that's just too bad.
Come on, man. It's the technology, right?
Yeah, it's the menu. It's the way you can go and listen to podcast. You know what podcasts are?
Yes,
Recorded shows. People can do podcasts from their home. All the big radio shows are also run as podcasts. You've now made the big radio show category, and your show now all the shows here on this station and this show run as podcasts. So if you want to listen to the Earl Ingram Show after the fact, you can go to whatever source of podcast people use, because there are different sources, and just source the Earl Ingram Show and find the right date, the right hour, and there you are.
You know, Sandy, the importance of it is this is the technology that's not going back, right? I mean, this is the future. And now, you know,
Have you seen the future the same way? I remember when the first George Bush went to a grocery store and was just and had to talk about it at a press conference about how he had seen the future, because they had this scanning device at the grocery store that could figure out the prices of everything he bought. And like those had been out for about 10 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he didn't have to go to the grocery store much. I mean,
very, very true. So, but you've seen that same future.
Yeah.
Incidentally, Earl, they do have scanning devices at grocery
you're
stores.
You're comparing me to George Bush Sr., and who, you know, a guy who clearly, you know, and all of the different things he was connected to, grocery shopping was not one.
I won't make that connection.
Yeah. But Sandy, watch the Packer game on Friday.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it was Saturday. What was
Friday
it?
Night.
Friday night. And it was an entertaining football game.
You know, I'm inclined to be more interested in the preseason games than the season games, because the preseason games is this
guys fighting for their life.
Yeah, guys fighting for jobs, a tryout time. You get to see a bunch of. It's a little bit more like a college game. You've got guys trying their bottoms off, trying to make the team, and talented guys. You know, all of them. Even though you know that a whole bunch of them aren't going to make the NFL roster, they're trying for at that point. And there was some talent exposed closed and they know this kid Goodson. I didn't remember him. I think I remembered watching Iowa play Wisconsin last year and seeing this smaller size back do a good job against Wisconsin, but there he was playing for the Packers.
You know, I generally watch maybe the first quarter of preseason football games because you didn't get to see normally the players, the top players, and it's understandably so. They're down to 3 preseason games now, which is a long way from the 6 that they used to have.
Well, and they have to make cuts right away. So, I mean, these guys only have about one shot at it.
But you know what it shows, though, Sandy? The talent levels of these players so close. You know, if you don't make it on the team you're with now, it used to be you could very easily connect with some other team, but they're all facing the same thing. We've got a short window to get these players in and the chance to bring other guys in. It's, you know, the talent level is so close.
Well, you know, actually, I think the salary cap has provided a benefit to that
lower tier
talent, because there's a bunch of guys who float around on practice teams, practice squads for several years and then make it because both for special teams purposes as well as for the backup jobs, they need to find low-cost talent and low-cost talent that they understand and can trust. And so I think more and more, actually, there is this journeyman class of guys playing in the NFL who are talented, not starters, cheap enough to stay on the roster. So it's undrafted people or free agent people or people who've been cut and now come back on practice squads who lose their draft status, money-making potential.
But, you know, if you look at the new Packer special teams coach, he wants to star players on special teams. That's the way it used to be, you know, long time ago. But now he wants that, and so that's going to kind of take away some slots for the Packers, maybe not other teams, but for the Packers especially, for those lower-tier guys. But I'll tell you, the lower tier guys, look, they're pro football players. They were the stars of their universities. These aren't also Rans. These are guys who are extremely talented. Probably, you know, when they were drafted, clearly were the best players on their university teams. They're not just, you know, also Rans. And a lot of times it's where you're drafted and all those things.
Well, I think that must be the wake-up call that these guys going from college to the pros have, is that everyone in the pros is that star.
They're a stud.
The star stud player. So it's
right.
There's no soft spots.
No.
I mean, a soft spot on a pro team is still someone who was an all-conference player, whatever conference they played in.
Well, yeah, they're 53 players. I remember when there was 65, and so there aren't a whole lot of spots. The other part of it, Sandy, is when you're paying one guy $50
million. Yeah.
That's
why I said these second-tier guys now have a shot at it, because the pay grades of, you know, and the skill positions have actually become more numerous. I mean, they've shifted around. It used to be running back. It's not running back anymore.
It used to be the lineman, offensive and defensive.
Well, it is. It's still the offensive left tackles. It's the edge rushers. It's the quarterbacks. It's the wide receivers.
Linebackers.
And wide receivers.
Defensive backs.
Yeah, and these guys are high-paid guys. It's not the same guys. It's not. Running back used to be a high-paid job.
Right.
It isn't anymore. Those guys get chewed up, used. and get paid okay, but not great.
You know, Sandy, what I'm beginning to realize, you know a little something about football. because only a guy who understands football understands that pace structure and why the defense, the running backs are now expendable, because it's a passing game.
Right.
And if a running back can get 1,000 yards now, that's pretty good.
Well, I think they found out that with the new schemes they have for running, the holes are pretty good sized. The linebackers are the ones making the tackles, so it's when you get to the second level that you get hit. and you can get to the second level whether you're Jim Brown or somebody else.
Right.
So there, you know, there are limited numbers of Derrick Henrys out there who are super.
A battering ram.
Yeah, super ball carriers, and if you aren't a super ball carrier, you're going to get. Look at Aaron Jones. No one even knew who Aaron Jones was when he came to the Packers. He was not a national star, even though he was a big time. I think he played for Las Vegas or something.
You know, I have to tell you that the Packers, their scouting is one of the best. In the entire NFL, even if they're not winning Super Bowls, the talent that they bring in the positions that they really are pretty brilliant with the guys that they have who are making these decisions, because you even look at their first two picks on defense this year. They're already talented. All across, they may have one of the best defenses in all of football, if not the best. Based on, you know, what they have, the best defensive backs in all of football. Nobody can argue that. Their linebackers now are pretty close to, before they added these guys, the only soft spot was their defensive line, and now they picked up some help there.
I mean, I think you look at the Wisconsin professional teams. You've got Horst for the
Bucks.
You've got
Gutekunst
for the Packers. You've got Stearns for the Brewers. All three of them are highly regarded front office, and that's you can tell how important that job is in professional sports now, because they build the team, right? And particularly with the pay structures the way they are, you've got to be able to find not just the stars. You better pick those right. But then you got to pick all the supporting cast that you can afford to keep.
And you know what else? All those guys are you just mentioned?
Young.
Yeah. Hey, Sandy, they're not sending us a message, are they? Let's keep that in sports and not in radio, okay? Let's got to go to a break because, you know, that's why, you know, we're not going to let Connor talk too much because
he's too young.
And too talented.
Yeah, he could show us.
Yeah, he really could.
He could show up real fast.
Yeah, we got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams is always good. My co-host, and we'll be back.
Radio great again. The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
That was my team back then. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, it's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy,
We're playing Monday morning quarterback.
Yeah. You know, I'm enjoying talking football with you because, you know, man, those old days of football and it's come so far.
Yeah, everyone today thinks Jim Brown was just a rock and roll performer, a funky music artist. And you and I know there was another Jim Brown who was a different kind of a guy.
Yeah, you know, football is still the number one sport.
Really?
Yeah.
In number one in what fashion?
American fans and the fan base and all of that. Basketball is still not overcome it.
Ah.
And I don't think it ever will. And, you know, football is...
Because America loves to watch people risking concussions.
So I was reading, what's his name? Brett Favre. Just reading this yesterday. Said that he thinks...
Brett Favre can write?
Yeah. He said that he thought he had probably 1,000 concussions a year.
Oh, my.
He said that every time he would get knocked down, and his head would hit the field, he'd see stars and hear music, and that he kept playing through that. And back then, remember, Brett Favre took some hellacious hits, right? Yeah. He was a tough guy.
There's no doubt that there were many concussions in football. Even I remember in high school getting my bell rung a couple
of times. Yeah, that's what they used to call it.
Yeah, you get your bell rung and you get up and sort of stagger around and feel dizzy. And it pull you over to the sideline and ask you what your name was. And okay, you're good.
Yeah, then after a play or two, the coach would say, "Hey, Williams.
Yeah.
You all right? Mom. You ready to go back?"
No, I mean, really, it was a shame because football, because the head injury is invisible.
Right.
And not perceptible, and there was such a machismo, there's such a can-do approach to football that the new approach to concussions is really important, which is that you protect the player against themselves.
Right.
Because the player is going to say, "I can go in, I'm good." Because you don't perceive the problem you've got from a concussion. Once your head clears a little bit, it's like, okay, and I'm...
Well, you know, Sandy, the other part of it is, and I promise you we're going to get to some other radio, but I have to, you know, I'm enjoying this conversation with Sandy. You know, Sandy, the helmets, the technology and the development of the helmets, you know, they used to have the plastic helmet with very little, if any, padding.
Yeah, we had they started out with, like, straps in them that would confine your head. And then I think by the time I was done playing in high school, they had foam padding and some. But helmets today are unbelievably heavy. You pick up a helmet today that's being worn in high school or college or professional ranks, and these helmets weigh quite a bit. You better have a strong neck, because when you go to the ground, your head is going to whip around.
There's no question about that. But it also, along with the technology in the helmets, is a cost that's out of this world. That's pricing youth football programs out of the market. And I know, because I ran one for 20 years and knew the cost of helmets. You know, the development in those over the last 5 years is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And if you look at some of the ones in college, all of them, and in the pros, and even in the suburban high schools, they have those that can measure a concussion.
Well, yeah. In fact, the Medical College of Wisconsin has a research program that's sort of headed up there, and that program was one of the programs that created these devices to put in helmets, and a bunch of high school programs around the state have been participating in research to try and pin down when it is a player might have gotten a concussion. But speaking of helmets, maybe we should put our thinking hats on, Earl.
well, listen, I have finished this up because there's also, with that new technology over on the sidelines, they can measure when it happens to a player.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know, and then I used to think that the concussion was measured by the weight of the player, the centrifugal force that runs into a player and knocks him to the ground, and all of those things, the brain moving, in the cranium, there's only a small amount of room.
Yeah.
And, you know, you figure a guy really rings your bell, as we used to say. You know, come on, Brett Favre had maybe thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of times. You know, you can tell there's a little something that's, you know.
Well, I mean, it's not a joking matter, because the CTE problem has become obviously pretty pernicious and common amongst older retired NFL players. People who play, the longer you play, the more likely you've had this bell rung. You know, they used to call it punch drunk with boxers.
Right.
Boxers are getting punched in the head all the time and not getting knocked out all the time. But the problem is that when the brain's like Jell-O inside this hard hard container, and when the Jell-O gets squished up against the side of the container by fast movement, a punch, head hitting the ground hard, you know, you get little contusions.
Sandy, I like the way you put that. Brains like Jell-O and hitting the. It's true. But I remember Willie Wood and Herb Adderley and guys like that who retired had CTE, and they just passed. Something that a lawsuit that says many of the elder players who retired and didn't get anything now are going to be eligible for some you know financial support from the NFL.
You can't remember your name and you commit acts of violence involuntarily. So here's a little money to compensate. I mean, the fact is that there's no compensation adequate for serious brain injury.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Right there. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number as Mondays. Mondays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. And Sandy, let's have at it. I was asking you off the air about where we are in this country right now. And you hear people talking off and on about one side or the other, either from the Democratic side or from the Republican side. But this nation is at a crossroads from the standpoint of lack of trust in its fellow countrymen. And so it is getting worse, progressively worse.
Well, it's not only lack of trust of the countrymen, but it's lack
of the nation itself.
Of the government.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's so frayed. Our society was, you know, when Donald Trump got elected, everyone saw it as an indication of the extent to which we were frayed amongst ourselves.
Right.
And we were pitted, we were polarized, conservative versus liberal. But now we've got this coalescence of distrust of the government where we've got the right, who are now announcing that they think that the left and liberalism is big government that the liberals are going to beset the country with is going to be the police state, and we have the left who views the right wing movement as something which if they take over the government we will have an autocracy, a Donald Trump autocracy or something like that, which will be a police state. So we've got both liberals and conservatives afraid of what the government might be doing to them, which is like the beginning of anarchy. You know, it's the beginning of the chaos that frequently does lead, in world history at least, it's led to dictatorships.
Well, you know, Sandy, when you're looking at that and from that perspective, and we know it's only getting worse, and then at the same time, you've got the American people or our government organizing for something outside of our government to be the entity that's going to destroy or trying to destroy our democracy, when the real dangers of destroying the democracy are within.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not nuclear missile close in time, but it's that the time is looming near on our horizon where we've got this, where this fragility is going to test the strength of our country's fiber. And it's, you know, 2024, you know, it could be 20,
right.
You know, it's very close. And people are now talking this way. And, you know, what's astounding to me is that we went from a country that was politically polarized and getting more polarized, probably starting with the Tea Party movement and some of that. And then this personality, Donald Trump, comes on the scene. And in 6 years, Donald Trump has converted that political polarity into this cult of a personality with populism gripping the country and people fearful of the government, you know, illegitimizing the government is what has happened under Donald Trump. He started out right from the very beginning of his administration attacking the CIA, attacking the pillars of the government, and now today we have, you know, political operatives, not backroom operatives, but actually elected officials, talking about defunding the Justice Department, defunding the FBI, trying to basically destroy the capacity of the United States government, the federal government, to enforce its laws.
You know, Sandy, we can go back to Newt Gingrich and his contract for America, and start seeing the changes in the Republican Party that we see now incrementally, right? I mean, when Newt Gingrich came in with his contract for America, I call it the contract on America, he started this movement. And certainly Ronald Reagan.
I was going to say, I think Ronald Reagan was the first symptom of this movement. I mean, and maybe even Barry Goldwater. I mean, there's always been a strong conservative pulse. There's always been a strong pulse against heavy taxation and removal of taxation. I think the fact that our government was never offering material services, you know, we have Medicare, we have a few things that are the pillars of service, government service, that the people of America find important, but we don't have anything like the pillars of service that are found in European government, like daycare and education and healthcare.
But
it was kind of easy to attack American government because people didn't have a lot of benefits they were deriving from it, and so the attack went on. But yeah, Newt Gingrich clearly, he was the first strategist, you know, the first guy with a very shrewd strategy about how to implement the conservative movement.
Well, and he made it, going back to Goldwater and Reagan, they didn't exactly make the Democrats the enemy. They weren't, you know, that callous.
Well, Reagan made the government the enemy.
Right.
And Democrats became, and then the Republicans, particularly under Newt Gingrich, became pretty good at labeling government and Democrats as one big operation, right?
Yes.
The government was brought to us. Their theory was, look, people, the government's your problem, and the government was brought to you by Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the Democrats.
You know, Sandy, and from that point to now, the crescendo has continue to rise, and we're at a point now where, after all of this time, I don't know how you fix that. Who can fix that? You know, if it's a Democrat, he certainly can't fix it. The Republican Party and the trajectory of it now, Sandy, you look at a person like the woman from Wyoming.
Bobert?
The congresswoman.
Marjorie.
No, the congresswoman from Wyoming.
Oh, Liz Cheney.
Liz Cheney.
Ah, yes.
A woman like that, of all people, I would have never thought that I would be supporting Liz Cheney because she was, you know, a neocon, just like a daddy. Mm-hmm. And so you would not expect to say that here's a person of virtue, not Liz Cheney. But now Liz Cheney is going to be removed from the Republican Party hierarchy. Why?
Because
how dare her?
Yeah, well, look at what happened to Senator McCain before he died.
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, there's this revisionist history. You remove Republicans who stand up for, you know, Mitt Romney's on the fringe of the Republican Party now because he's kind of stood up for decency and the civility. The real problem, I think, is that the rule of law is fragile. And I was saying off the air, my dad long ago, I think he was wiser than I think that's the way all fathers are. They're much wiser than we give them credit for.
That's correct.
Until you get older. But he used to talk about the fragility of the rule of law. And then I was sitting on a plane, on a long plane flight to Europe once, next to a very wealthy guy. Maybe he was, I don't know what his name was, maybe a billionaire, but he had started a foundation that was all devoted to the rule of law. And he was spending his life at that point traveling around to various countries and working on funding organizations within countries to install the rule of law. And he, too, talked about how how fragile the rule of law is and how important it is. And now I realize in the United States how very both fragile it is and how important it is, because we're on the brink of losing the rule of law in the United States. The, you know, and he, both of them would talk about how the rule of law is a norm that has to be embedded in the culture of a country. And until it's embedded in the culture of the country, you can't effectively have a government who installs it, because the government will become the subject of, it will be viewed as a police state. It will have to use a strong arm to install the rule of law against the will of the people, unless the people are willfully involved with
it. But if you've got people like those folk who supporting Donald Trump, what happens to a nation where you have armed people supporting Donald Trump outside of the FBI offices? Armed guys. Right?
Right. I mean it's a, what's happening right now is a direct assault on the U.S. Rule of law. Because if you want to defund the if you want to defund the very entities that enforce the federal rule of law, if you know, there's been this effort ever since the contract with America to basically defund the government, right? Defund the EPA, to defund all the parts of the government that were parts of the rule of law that were enforcing these unpleasant and inconvenient regulations and laws against business and against people, you know, defund the IRS. There's been a long-term sort of assault on the rule of law through that process. But now it's very direct. And now it's, you know, the notion is that if the rule of law is applied against important person like Donald Trump, it's illegitimate, per se. And so this has opened the door to the attack generally on the rule of law. And like I said last week, you know, it's clear to me that many of the 20 million people who are the private owners of AR-15s bought them because they felt that AR-15 could be necessary in what would be a fight against the government when the government came to impose the rule of law against them with respect to some law that they viewed as illegitimate. Which, you know, if everyone can pick and choose the laws that they find legitimate and the ones they find illegitimate, well, the rule of law is done. It's cooked. It's over.
You know, Sandy, and because some of us would say, why would the FBI, why would our government allow people to make these threats towards the FBI and then stand outside of FBI offices with American flags and their AR-15s, in essence, threatening the FBI, which represents the government, in broad daylight?
Well,
right?
I don't mind any public display of dissidents, or you know, I don't mind flags, I don't mind signs. I do think
the automatic weapons.
I think the automatic weapons change the tenor from a public display of political opinion to something else. And, you know, to me, that's the whole problem that is fraught within the American view of this Second Amendment, this right to bear arms. Because when someone is bearing arms in the process of a political dispute, it's threatening. It's a different thing. And the arms can quickly be drawn and used. It's a bit like calling out the National Guard to stop any time there is a public display of political disaffection, which everyone would view as being the act of a police state. So we've got we have a serious problem.
But you couple that with threatening rhetoric. You know,
a rhetoric, you know, I do believe in this. I do believe in the First Amendment. I think rhetoric is, you know, I think threatening rhetoric has to be viewed as a symptom that needs to be dealt with. I think if the rhetoric is designed to whip up insurrection so that, you know, rhetoric, you can't cry fire in a movie theater if there isn't a fire, because you'll have a stampede that people will get injured in. And the President of the United States is maybe not entitled to tell an angry mob to march on the Capitol on the day that the transfer of power from that president to another is going to occur. That's different than mere rhetoric.
You know, Sandy, we just saw what this stuff can lead to. And instead of, you know, people learning their lessons, it hasn't gone away. And the people didn't go away. And what they believe is their fight didn't go away. And so they basically were silent up until the time of this so-called raid on Trump's, you know.
Well, you know, what I'd be interested in is, you know, you frequently have callers, CJ and Dave and other conservatives, and I'm seriously interested in how they feel about this whole rule of law issue and the notion of the police state and whether they carry this concern that I've described, because I think it's a serious problem, and my view is that in all likelihood, people like them ought to be very worried about the fraying of the rule of law, because conservatives and liberals alike have always relied upon it to be the treasure of American government.
You gotta go to the break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. You know, Sandy, I want to continue our conversation about what we started the last segment in and where we really are. There are people who say, well, you know, we're Republicans and we're Americans, and unless you listen to and believe in the things we believe, you're less an American than I am. Well, I mean, it's insanity. How do you measure someone being less of an American than somebody else when what makes you an American, Sandy, is not the fact that you're a Republican or a Democrat? You live in this nation. That's all it takes for you to be.
Well, I do think when the conservatives and Republicans attempted to appropriate the flag of the United States as their symbol,
they own it,
and I think that over time it has crept into the viewpoint of conservatives that liberals are un-American. It's a bit like it's like an expansion of the Joe McCarthy Un-American Activities Committee of 1952 and 1953, where, you know, people were pinkos if they were essentially too liberal.
Right.
And that has redeveloped here, and liberals are viewed, I do believe, as less American, less patriotic, and that right there is the beginning of the notion that arms and the ends justify the means. We can't let these un-American people take control of the government. We can't let them vote. I mean, to me, that whole subconscious viewpoint that liberals are un-American, liberals are dangerous to the democracy, liberals are dangerous to the fabric of American society, all of these things are undercurrents today in the conservative movement, and those undercurrents are the very things that legitimize in people's minds sort of the ends justify the means. We can't let this country slip into the hands of un-American people. We have to make sure it's hard for them to vote. Huh? We have to make sure that we take steps to make it very hard for them to accomplish their objectives in Congress. We need to get in the way of this liberal movement, because they are going to destroy the fabric of America. CJ, people who are conservative talk like this because they think like this, and they do believe they're very American. That fellow that I talk about on the plane that told me he carried arms all the time, and I asked him, why do you like Donald Trump so much? He said, because Donald Trump loves America and I love America.
But just because that's how they think doesn't mean that the rest of us agree with it. And the fact that that's their opinion.
Well, perception is Perception is so important to people. I mean, you have to. And if we're going to empathize and try to understand how to bring the country together, we have to understand what the perceptions, what my perceptions are, what your perceptions are, and what their
perceptions are. And they don't have to understand our perceptions, though.
Well, they need to wake up.
Right.
They need to wake up and be empathetic as well. But we have to wake up empathy and this ability to project to others, and it's gone to sleep.
So there in Sandy, it's what we're really talking about here, is the fact that they believe so much in that they won't allow any other thought to come into their heads because they're right and everybody else is wrong. And so what makes them right? Well, I feel that way. It was no different than...
Well, that's called fearful thinking. Fear is based entirely on perceptions. If you think that there's a scary guy in your closet when you're laying in your bed at night, you're afraid, very afraid.
Right.
And it wouldn't matter if someone came in and said, there isn't someone in the closet, not until they open the door and prove to you that there isn't, right? That's what four-year-olds experience. And that fear exists today. And that's what the conservatives are fearful. They're honestly afraid that the America that is important to them because it's provided them with their sustenance and whatever is going to be destroyed. You know, is this a rational thought? No, it's not a rational thought, but it is an honestly perceived fear.
So my response to that is, okay, that's how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of us...
Get over it.
Yeah, the rest of us shouldn't have to deal with your idiosyncrasies. I mean, being an adult is, hey, I have a right to my views and thoughts, but I don't have a right to force them on other people. Why are we at a point in the society now, Sandy, where we have to understand why a guy says...
Well, perceptions really are important, though. I mean, if you and I are humane people, if we're going
right
down the street, we've come upon a guy who's got mental challenges,
right,
schizophrenic.
Right.
And he's sitting cowering because he's telling you that there's a terribly frightening
right
guy, a demon, right across the street from him, and he's terrified to cross the street. What will we do? We will sit down with that person and we'll try to persuade them that demon isn't there. We'll find 10 different ways to try and help them understand that what they're afraid of is not real. But we do feel empathy for the fact that that's how they feel. Well, I'm not saying that conservatives are crazy, but conservatives have this fear in them that's as real as that demon for the fellow.
But Sandy, if it comes to a point where it's threatening the very fabric of the nation,
mm-hmm,
there's got to be challenged.
Well, we've got to figure out a way to solve for it. That's for sure.
Right.
Because if we don't, and the problem is that we're getting so close to this point of fraying the fabric of our society that it's going to tear. And so we need to figure out a way to wake up everybody. We need to
right.
we need to wake up this sense of polarization, but more the sense of fear about what it is that's impending. Because fear is what causes people to pull the trigger on their AR-15, and I mean that honestly.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, but Sandy, how you know we know this exists? Psychologists and psychiatrists everywhere looking at this and wondering how do we begin to fix it, but obviously conversation about it starts it, and we've got to make sure that people have those conversations openly, right, and not just sit back and say, well, Donald Trump said that. That's not the answer. You've got to be able to do think yourself, right?
Well, for some reason, Donald Trump has become, it's almost like in one of these video games, he's become a heroic figure in a sort of a comic book fashion to millions and millions of people. And tens of millions of people. And he has become unduly important in their mind, and he's become symbolic of all the things they're afraid of. This billionaire huckster. And everyone, even the people who follow him, would probably laugh and agree that he's a billionaire huckster, except he somehow he somehow found a way into their sub-intellect that makes him very, very important.
All right. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.